And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Erica Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome back. 7:55 is real. Sorry we're a little late, folks. Thanks for joining us. If you're on watching us on YouTube, give us good ratings and all that and check our sponsors. Eric, I don't know if you watched the game on Wednesday against Red Sox, but it was the Braves' first walk-off of the year. And we got so used to those that it seemed like it was just de rigueur, and it was what the Braves were going to do. I mean, because they had so many walk-offs or last-at-bat wins or comebacks. So to see them do it, it reminded you that it's been a while since they did it. What can that do? Orlando Arcia hit a two-run walk-off like that. What can that do for a team, especially going into that off day, salvaging a split with the Red Sox? I mean, the guy said that maybe this would be something that, you know, that could really get everybody going.
I kind of hate when it comes before an off day. You know, because it's almost like off days seem to always reset a lot of things. You know, like you're in a slump, you get an off day. It's like, all right, you forget about everything and move on. I always like when you get a big win to play the next day.
Yeah.
But regardless, you know, this team needs to start winning games late. That's kind of what they've been known for. And anytime you get a walk-off, you know, even just the celebration itself is just so fun for the team. And
yeah.
What I love about it, though, is the guy that hit it is one of the guys that you're going to have to answer questions why they're on the team or what's this guy doing.
Yep.
You know, when the guys that are on the bottom of the roster start contributing and getting big hits, and those are guys that your teammates are rooting for because they see him putting in the work all year long, right? And you know, even if you're not paying attention to stuff as a player, you still hear the comments or hear certain reporters asking questions of this guy's roster spot, that guy's roster spot, what are you going to do if guys are earning their roster spot? And when a guy does that, that's been, you know, I mean, he hadn't even hit in, what, a week?
Yeah.
It gets three hits with a walk-off. You know, you can't be happier than you are for that teammate. And it's like its own special celebration just for that guy's career and what that meant to him. I just thought it was a really cool moment.
Yeah, you mentioned not only was it his first, their first walk-off win or their first win in their final at bat, because they were really, that was becoming their MO under Snit, was to come back and win in your final at bat. Now, what that means, because some people think that final at bat means winning on a walk-off. No, winning your final at bat can be you score the winning run in the top of the ninth if you're on the road, or in the bottom of the ninth if you're at home. Or do you score the winning run in the bottom of the eighth at home, and the other team doesn't score in the top of the ninth. So that's your final at bat.
Go ahead.
Right. So that's what that is. That's their first win in their final at bat this year. And that was becoming the norm for these guys, it felt like, you know, for about three or four years. It was also just the third time in 19 games this year the Braves won after their opponent scored first in a game. They could score one run in the first inning. The Braves had only won twice in 18 games in those, which is kind of – conversely, they had won. They are 12-1 when they score first. So, I mean, that's the other side of that. But it's kind of bad when the die is set in the first inning if a team scores a run. You know, you have like no games where you could even think of you came back during the year. So maybe they start to get things turned around in that regard. But
I think that's kind of been a luxury this team's had is when you're getting those comeback wins all the time.
Yeah.
There's no pressure early. Right.
Because
you're just thinking, well, you know, we all step up. It's what we do. You know, you have a bad at bat in third. It's OK. You put it behind you. But when you're not making those comebacks, then you start pressing earlier and earlier in the game. And, you know, anytime in baseball that you're pressing, things don't usually go well. So I think it's good. You know, that's when things turned around last year, is that when they started making those big late wins, like that comeback in St. Louis, things like happen. Takes the pressure off the offense. And then you get bases loaded in the fourth inning and you come up and you don't feel like you have to be a hero or do anything special. You know, it's like, if I don't get a knock here, the next guy will. And if we don't do it this inning, we're doing it the next inning. But it gets harder and harder to have that mindset when you don't, when you keep coming up short, you know, so that pressure builds. So I think anytime they get these late wins, they kind of just build the momentum and it'll take pressure off the offense.
They trailed 3-0 going in the bottom of the third inning Wednesday. And then the Braves got three runs in that third inning on a Matt Olson RBI double off the wall. Yep. And that was after a two-run homer by Travis DeMeritt. DeMeritt has really been a big story early in the season, or it's only been the last 3 weeks, I think. But this is a guy that's, you know, he's a former top prospect and really had become a young journeyman in that he's bounced around, you know, from AAA to the majors, but then to Detroit, gets traded, gets picked up on waivers. I mean, all signs were pointing to this guy being a journeyman at the age of 27. But he's kind of playing right now like he might be able to carve out a spot on the with the Braves, even if it's as a fourth outfielder, that kind of thing. He's not great in the field, but he's made a couple of nice plays in the field. He gets bad jumps and makes up for them with athleticism, but he's really hit. He's got some big hits.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what happens in a guy's career if you don't come up, because he was a prospect.
Yeah.
But he didn't come up and hit right away. He didn't come up and play well right away. You know, it's why there's so much pressure on guys not to get sent back to AAA, and why it's so important for them to do well immediately and not ride that bus. Because every time you jump on that thing and go up and down, you're wondering if this is going to be my last chance. Or you come up and you're wondering if I have a bad week or here or there, you know, am I getting sent down again? Because it's always in the back of your head, at least until you get to arbitration. So, you know, luckily for him, he came up and got off to a good start. And that good start by itself might give him the confidence and take enough pressure off where he can actually ride this into a career at this point. Because it's not like he didn't have the talent.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, through all that failure and through all dealing with a lot of different coaches at, you know, AAA with the Braves, majors with the Braves. But before that, AAA and majors with the Tigers. You run across a lot of guys. I mean, you run across Miggy Cabrera when you're playing with the Tigers. I mean, you run across a lot of guys, and somewhere on the line you've talked about one guy might say something. But he's made some adjustments, and he's hitting. He didn't hit like this in the past. If you look at his numbers, he was a big strikeout guy who did not hit for a high average in the majors at all in his limited time. But he really looks to me, I mean, what he's doing in the box this year does not look fluky to me at all.
No, I mean, that ball he hit the other day was stroked. Yeah. Have you asked him about that, you know, kind of what clicked or what he feels like is different?
Well, he spoke about it in general terms, that he's made some adjustments in his approach and in the box. But he didn't talk any specifics, really. But he's learned a lot of, you know, over the years of failing and getting sent down and all that and talking to different coaches. But, I mean, he's killed it in AAA, you know. So this is the first time he's really been able to apply it, though, in the big leagues and have that same kind of success. So. Good for him. He's a good dude. He's from here. He's from the area. Yeah. So he's got a lot of fans down here. So we'll see. But he's getting a chance to play a lot because of the injuries. You know, Eddie Rosario is not going to be back for another couple of months. So he's going to get a lot of chance to play. And the trade deadline is not till, you know, July. So not looking for any significant outfielders to be moved for that. And if he keeps hitting like this, there's no real urgency for the Braves to make a move in the outfield. Plus, they don't want to do that because they got – you know, Drew Waters knocking at the door if he can stay healthy. And then behind him, Michael Harris is in AA, and he's only a phone call away. He could go to AAA and get called up at some point if they need him. So, you know, they don't want to go out and spend a lot of money on another outfielder, especially one that's signed beyond this year.
Yeah, well, it's just huge that Travis has played like that, because it doesn't put him in a position where they have to try to make a move too soon or anything like that. And that's why that depth is so huge in the first place. But I'm happy for him. You know, I mean, I know what it's like to struggle and be on that up and down and wondering if you got it and everything like that. It must just feel great for him to be playing the way he is and feel like he's finally establishing himself as a big leaguer.
And doing it here in Atlanta.
In Atlanta, too.
Family and friends nearby. It's different than playing in Detroit, you know. A lot of support for him here.
Yeah.
It gave him the first walk-off win. It also was a reprieve from, man, they have been dominated by the AL the last couple of years. It has been weird. Before that win, the Braves were 6-15 in interleague games since the beginning of last year. And here's the weird one. 1-10 at Truist Park. That's hard to do, man, for a team that won the World Series. 1-9 last year against American League teams at home.
I don't, these are the things that I just don't have any input on, you know, like
It doesn't make sense. And they play a tough division, you know, in the AL. So, you know, it can happen. But, man, Boston has been a tough matchup for them in recent years. So the Yankees and the Blue Jays just killed them last year. Remember, they killed them down in Florida when the games were in Dunedin.
Yep.
And that was where Darno got hurt. And they killed him up here.
Yeah, and, you know, it makes sense sometimes before the DH. Yeah, like maybe you're just not used to pitching to these real offensive heavy lineups, but everybody's got it now. And the numbers, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that I don't really have an answer for, but it's not like I look at this division and I'm like, there's not many divisions better regardless. I mean, I know that the AL East it's always power heavy, but I don't see any drastic difference even as a player when I pitched in both leagues. If you make a good pitch, they're out. You know, that it's sometimes it's just the AL teams are more manufactured to put up those crooked numbers.
Right.
NL teams are more strategic, but now everybody's got a DH and everybody's built for power. So I don't have any reason for that.
But last year they weren't. And that's a good point. The Braves weren't built for the DH last year. They'd had it the year before and they got lucky and they had some depth and they were able to do it. But last year they did not have a designated DH. They've shuffled a bunch of guys into that. And AL teams obviously do. They're built for the DH. So they have a guy specifically, or they have a couple.
They wouldn't even get their DH in the NL though, and they still kick their ass. You know, it's like, I don't know. I can't think of the reason for that.
Yeah. Matt Olson leads the majors in doubles with 14. He's tied for third in the NL with 17 extra base hits. That obviously means he's hit only 3 home runs for him. He hit 39, I think, last year, including led the majors in home runs off lefties against lefties. A lot of these, I can think of like 4 or 5 at least that he's hit off the wall. And I think he's a couple of feet away from having 6 or 7 home runs.
Yep.
I think he's going to hit a rash of home runs here pretty quick. This swing looks good.
Do you know what I was thinking as far as the balls go is it's almost like the weather's a factor again.
Yeah.
I think the balls will start flying when it warms up. Whatever they're doing with the humidifiers and stuff, it's making the air grab the ball more. But I think he's probably hit at least 4 that I've seen that I'm like, that was a homer last year.
Yeah.
Even some of his fly balls to the track, honestly. So he might have more. But I think once it warms up, I think those balls will start carrying over. It's not like he's having bad at bats. Even though his numbers haven't been great since he got off to the hot start, if you look at his overall numbers, they're still great.
Right. And the ball did carry a lot better, I thought, on this in the last couple of games here.
Yeah.
And because you saw some home runs that landed 10 rows deep that you thought were going to. They weren't going up and then coming straight down at the track like they were in the first few weeks of the season. So that might be a difference in the weather. Who knows? The way baseball tinkers with the ball, they might have told them to turn off the humidors in some places until they figure things out, you know? So the seams might not be causing as much drag. Who knows?
It sucks that you can't trust that.
I still think it had something to do with Charlie Morton's start, the seams on the ball.
Yeah.
You know, if the seams are, if it's causing a different reaction and on balls hit, you know, way up in the air when they catch the drag, you got to think a guy that throws breaking balls all the time, it's going to have some effect on breaking balls.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's going to have an effect on how much you could spin the ball, you know, and grip it, but it's also going to have an effect on how much those seams grip, you know, while they're spinning toward the plate. So, I mean, it changes your whole starting point of every pitch. You know, if you're getting an extra 6 inches of break or missing 6 inches of break, I mean, that's a 12 inch, you know, that's like a foot. You have to gauge where to aim now in the difference of each pitch. So
and
it doesn't explain to me why they're able to take it because, you know, it's a lot of his breaking balls that are just a little off or, you know, like a backdoor breaking ball that they don't swing at or the ones in the dirt. But it explains to me why he'd be a little off with his control.
And it does, and it would explain why he could have the same spin rate, 3,100, better than anybody else in the, you know, almost in baseball, and have like 30 pitches over 3,000 spin rate. But it would explain why you could have the same spin rate and the ball not moving quite as much. It's not quite that huge bend that he had last year where guys just look silly swinging at, you know, pitch this far off the plate. He's not getting quite that much break I haven't seen this year. And that would help explain it.
Well, so guys had this theory. I played with a lot of guys, and it was always, you know, when you threw a breaking ball, you wanted 4 seams spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played with Luke Gregerson, and he threw a 2-seam breaking ball, which means what he lined the spin up so that it was rotating on only 2 seams grabbing, so just the 2 horseshoes.
Right.
And the other 4 seams were here, right, not grabbing. And he had a ridiculous slider. And, you know, right. I'd never been taught that. And I asked him about it. And he said, I think it breaks later. So take that same logic into Charlie's.
Uh-huh.
Charlie's breaking ball might be breaking a little earlier, which earlier break, they're going to see a little better.
Right.
So
right.
It could be a bigger break, but a little sloppier. I don't know. I mean, this is just me thinking, trying to make sense of it. But yeah. if it's an earlier break, the hitter has that little extra time to recognize that they could take it. You know, but when you have the ball not gripping, but he puts so much spin on it, eventually it's going to dip that it's breaking later and closer to the plate. Then he gets those swing and misses.
Well, I mean, that would make sense. These are because there's got to be a reason, because people are looking for reasons why Charlie has not had the swing and miss that he had last year when he's throwing at the same velo, basically. I mean, maybe a mile an hour less, but the same for all intents
same
and purposes.
Same spin, same
still,
velo.
And still same spin rate. And it's not getting the chase. That would explain, you know, go a long way towards explaining it.
I mean, that's kind of my thought on it, is maybe the seams are gripping too much for him. So it's like he's having it break more out of the zone. So it's not in the zone quite as long to engage him and get him to chase. And if it's breaking earlier, you know, like those seams spinning, if it's crazy because you think like a centimeter wouldn't make a difference.
Right.
But if they're just that much bigger, it changes everything.
Sure.
So it could be. You know, this is just me making shit up off the top of my head and trying to think through it, but it could be something to think about.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Going back to Arcia, people that really didn't follow the Brewers much when he was up there, but he had some huge hits for the Brewers, including some postseason hits. I mean, they loved him up in Milwaukee. When he left, they were like, why'd we let this guy go? And he comes here and he's a bench guy. Remember, he spent like a month in AAA here before he even got called up. No more than a month. I think a couple months. And then they had some injuries that brought him up, and they put him in the outfield because that's where they had a need last year before they made all the trades in July. So he had never really played. He played like one game in the outfield before they had him play some in the minors so he could bring him up, kind of like Riley that year.
Yeah.
So, and quite honestly, I think he's better in the outfield than Marcell Ozuna because of the arm. Marcell Ozuna's arm's so bad.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. And Arcia looks fine out there. He's not great, but he's not bad. And he's got a good arm. So he's hitting .355. With a .432 OBP, .949 OPS. It's only 37 plate appearances. But as a DH, he's 6-for-14 with a .1080 OPS in four games. He's also started games at third. He's also played third and left field. And here's at least curious. He's got a reverse splits this year. He's a righty. He's got 9-for-18 with a double, a homer, and a .1313 OPS in 22 plate appearances against righties. Now, that's a small sample size. It could be a couple of pitchers that he just hits well. But that's some nice reverse splits. Last year it was more normal, pretty extreme to the other side. So I don't know. I'd be finding ways, while he's got a hot hand at least, to get him in the lineup a little bit more, especially while Ozuna has struggled so much. Now, Ozuna's still getting hitting balls hard, and I think he's going to come out of this. He's been hitting balls hard again lately. But I would be finding some ways to get Arcia in the lineup a little bit more. He's only starting one out of every three games. He started 10 games out of 31 games, 32 games.
You kind of have to, you know, when a guy, and that's how you work your way into the lineup, you know, and you ride it. When he starts to struggle, it's not like you can't take him out of it.
Right.
But anytime you got a guy swinging the bat really well, I mean, you have to find a way to get that in there. And you have a few guys that you could give a few more days off and just work him into that. 8 or 9 spot in the lineup and just see what he does. But, you know, he's never been known for his bat, but to me, he has pretty decent at bats. And if he's not killing you in the field, what's it hurt to mix him in there a few times and give somebody that's, you know, in a 3-day slump, give him a day off. And then those resets, that's what I was talking about. You know, those resets are nice even for, even for a guy that, you know, there is no day off, but you just give him one and tell him just to shut your brain down for a day.
It's also worth mentioning. Now, maybe that maybe the Braves are talking to Dansby about extension, but I haven't heard anything to that effect. And he's in the last year of a contract, which is usually when a guy gets this far, they go to free agency. I mean, that's the normal. Arcia signed a 2-year deal last year, and he's really team friendly deal. He's making 1.6 this year, 1.3 next year, and then there's a $2 million club option that only has a $100,000 buyout for 2024. He could always be. We've talked about what they could do in the future if they want a bridge like Grissom, that top shortstop prospect. Arcia can play shortstop, man, well enough to be in the lineup every day if they need him to be.
So yeah, and that's
a possibility if they. And I'm not trying to talk Dansby off the team because Dansby, you know, in a lot of ways, he adds a lot to this team in a lot of ways, including that defense, obviously. But if they were looking, you know, it's not like the cupboard's bare if they didn't at a bridge. They don't have to go out and get a guy and pay him $15 million or $20
million. Well, it's hard to find that for 1 year, you know, if you have this guy that you don't want to block. But, you know, I think it's tough to operate on not blocking prospects. I mean, you see so many come up and fail, and it's like, now what?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's nice to have a guy like Arcia too that you know he's accepted not being the guy, not being the starting everyday guy. So you can work someone else in, and it's kind of a chance to give somebody a trial year with if you have that prospect come up and you don't think he's ready and he's overwhelmed by the big leagues, you think it might be 2 or 3 more years.
Yeah.
You can find a decent shortstop on a 2-year deal or 3-year deal. It's hard to find a really good one for one.
That option could be nice too for 2024 because basically you have him for 2 more years if you want him at a really, really affordable rate.
And when it's that affordable, you know, once your guy's ready that you want to go to, it's not that big a deal to sit him.
And in the interim, you can afford to pay a couple other guys that you might not have if you're paying Dansby $15-20 million next year.
I'm always okay with having a shortstop hitting 240, 250 on the team playing great defense.
Right. Arcia, after the walk-off, kind of asked him how you staying sharp, not playing much, you know, because he played a lot in the past. In the last couple of years, he's had to get used to a limited role. And he had a great answer. He said, you have to be prepared for any situation, whether you're playing or not. And if you're not playing, you have to be out there supporting your teammates, doing everything you can to contribute to the team. But like I said, it's all about preparation. It's about staying ready in the cage, getting your swings in, and being ready for whenever your number's called, like in any situation, like it happened tonight. I think that was another one of these we're seeing some carryover from Kung Fu Panda last year.
Yeah.
Because he really taught a lot of guys, Latin guys especially, a lot of the secrets on how he stayed so sharp pinch hitting. Because remember, he was pinch hitter extraordinaire in the first couple of months of the season. He saved their asses so many games early in the season. And I think a lot of guys just being around him saw, oh, that's how you do it, huh? You go down there at this point of the game, get ready, stick your swings and all that. So,
yep. And he learned from somebody else. You know, I mean, you just, those kind of things need to be passed on. Eric Kinski was great at that. You know, when guys would get demoted into some role they didn't want to be in, you know, your first tendency is to pout and complain about how hard it is. And it's not about, you know, they realize it's not about them and everything's not catered to them anymore. And it's like, you know, seventh inning, all of a sudden we need you to hit.
Yeah.
And they've been twiddling their thumbs, pouting the whole game, and they go up and punch out. You know, it definitely takes a lot of mental strength and preparation. And you know, the hardest part is just never knowing when your moment's going to be.
Yeah.
And so you prepare for it today. It's like being a reliever, honestly. You prepare for it. You feel great. You're ready. And then the game rolls in a way that they don't need you. It's like, shit. So then you do it the next day. They don't need me. Shit. And so like day 5, you're like, fuck, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
And that's when they call on you to pinch hit. So it's really hard for guys to just always stay in that mode and stay ready when most of the time the opportunity doesn't come. And as soon as you let your guard down, that's when they need you and you have to be ready or, you know, you're probably going back to AAA or getting released. It's a tough spot to be in and a big adjustment.
And he didn't know he was playing until he got to the ballpark.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
maybe he went out and got hammered the night before. If I'm not playing tomorrow, and then they call your name, and that one game you get this week is you're at your absolute worst.
He said, I wasn't sure if I was playing or not. He said, it's the same either way, though, whether I'm playing or not playing. I'm coming to the ballpark with that same enthusiasm, that same energy. And if I'm in the lineup, I'm going to apply 100% of my energy and effort into being in the lineup. And if I'm not, I'm going to put 100% of my energy and effort into supporting my teammates for the whole game.
Yeah.
So he's saying the right things, man.
It's just so much easier said than done.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought really big of Ian Anderson to really recover from a rough start early in that game. He really showed some. Ian on that on Orlando Arcia, by the way, he said, I think it's one of those situations where when he gets into there, he wants to show something. So kind of a right place, right time, and he can get to a fastball. He showed it there. Arcia really can hit fastballs, man.
Yeah.
It's hard to get one past him. And on the walk-off, Ian said, it was exciting. I thought we played a good game, and for it to kind of pay off like that in the ninth, Ozzie gets the hit, and for Arcia to walk it off, it's a good feeling. The guys are excited heading the off day, regroup a little bit, and we got a bunch of games coming up, so hopefully we can carry that over. And also about Demerit and Arcia being kind of unsung heroes. Are they the kind of guy that could impact the team all season? He said, definitely. They're great guys in the clubhouse. They fit in good. They're the kind of guys that every team needs, that kind of spark plug. They're more than capable of that, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. Snit talking about Arcia said, it's great because he hasn't been playing a lot. He started off the year getting a few at-bats. He hasn't lost his enthusiasm and his work and the energy and everything. He's a good player. He's got a hit off the closer for the Mets the other day in a pinch hit role. That was his one pinch hit at-bat this year. And he said, I'm happy for him. And that walk-off win, Snit said, I didn't say anything, but I was thinking we haven't had one of these yet, a walk-off win. So, yeah, absolutely, it helps a lot. For everything that you put into a game like that to come out with a win, especially like that, it means a lot.
Yeah, and those are, you know, those are the things, too, that they remember that in July when you're struggling.
Yeah.
And you have to fill in two games and you go 0-for-4 and everybody's like, why is this guy on the team? Well, they've been watching him work and stay ready all year, but they still know how hard it is.
Yeah.
And, you put anybody in that role, they're coming in and going 0-for-4 once in a while because it's just so hard to do. But that's part of the stuff that, you know, that's why you get a ring, even if you're released in July for this, this walk-off he just hit or staying prepared and doing this stuff and showing guys, like, it has an effect on the team.
Yeah, like Kung Fu Panda last year. Did he get a ring? I got asked, did he get a ring? Of course he got a ring.
Yeah, you know? He got a ring.
Even if he hadn't done anything in those bats, he would have got a ring for playing. But he had huge impact on the team early on.
Well, and if they don't win those games, he helped them win those 4 or 5. And now you're looking at it and you're down 9 instead of 5 or wherever you're at when you start that hot streak. It's even a bigger gap to climb out of, and every game counts.
And you might not even have made those moves in July if you'd have been that far back, you know?
Right.
Ian Anderson, I was talking about him. I thought he really, because it looked kind of in the second inning, you're like, oh, here we go again. He gave up a bomb to Trevor Story, the first homer Trevor's hit this year, but it's straight center. I mean, it was a shot. So he gives up 2-run homer. They're down 2-0 in the second inning. And we've seen this all year when they get behind like that. Like I said, they haven't been able to come back. Then he gives up another run in the third on a double and a J.D. Martinez single. Rafael Devers just killed him. He had a double and then J.D. Martinez single. They're down 3-0. But after that, he was really sharp. I thought Ian was really impressive after that. So he ends up going 5 1/3, didn't give up any more runs, gave up 7 hits total, just one walk, which is big because he had, you know, he's had a couple of 4 walk games. And gave the team a chance, and they come back and that's what that has been their key in recent years is hold it there. And then the bullpen was locked down. McHugh came in, bases loaded, man, got a huge couple of outs. I thought that was he got a benefit of a low strike call because that was out of the zone, but that was huge, man. Paulecki got thrown out. Cora gets thrown out for argument. And they had an argument, but, you know, you're going to get some calls like that go against you and some calls go for you. But I thought McHugh was huge in that, and everybody that came in after him too. That was big bullpen performance.
Well, that's another reason why it's so important to get these comeback wins is, you know, if you never want to admit, you think about whether we're winning the game or not, or if we can get back in this, but when you've seen your team do it, it's that much more motivating to lock back in when your starts, his start wasn't a wash when he gave up 3, but if you're giving up 4 or 5, it's hard to, you know, really good team guys will just be like, yeah, I gotta keep it at four. I gotta keep it at five. But a lot of guys will just throw in the towel. And when you know your team can get back in it, each guy coming in for the starter two thinks, if I keep it at three, we're winning this game. Or if I keep it at two, we're winning this game. But when you never come back,
yeah,
it's kind of like,
right. What's the point? And you know, you talked about, you answered a reader on the room that we did last week. Somebody was asking about why didn't they use Kinley and Will Smith, you know, and I said, you're not going to use your closer
the next day.
Will Smith, what if Will Smith, they pitched two down and thrown 25 pitches in that game? If he'd thrown 25 pitches, he probably would not have used them the next day.
Right.
He pitched his ass off in this game. So did Minter. And then Kinley came in and did his thing. So the bullpen was locked down when they had a chance to win this thing, and they did, and they pulled it out, you know, with a walk-off. So, you know.
That's why it's so hard to manage, because you always have to think that, you know, what if Will Smith has a – even when it's like it's touchy to get a guy an inning of work, because what if it turns into a 32-pitch inning of work?
Yeah.
And now we don't have him today, and we're down one, or we're tied in the eighth. You know, that's why it's – I don't understand it, because Snitz won four straight division titles in a World Series.
Yeah.
But he just gets
questioning.
The questioning of his bullpen management in a vacuum, you know, today's decision without thinking about, you know, tomorrow, the next day, the day before, what guys are being used.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me anybody that criticizes Snit actually goes back and looks at the game log and is like, oh, Smith pitched three out of four. Right. He needs a day off. Or if he pitches today, he's down tomorrow. But Snit has to juggle all that all year long. And I don't understand.
Right.
I mean, it keeps working. They've kept winning. How he gets so much criticism. I think it's just the nature of it.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You as a reliever know that the worst or the most inaccurate second guessing that people do is bullpen management.
Yeah.
And the reason being simple, we, even the media, we don't know everything that's going on in the bullpen.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times a guy might have a little soreness. He might get up to warm up and feels a little soreness. You know, he might get up and feel a twinge, or he might have got up two times earlier in the game and warmed up, or he might have warmed up three times the night before and be unavailable. And the manager's not going to say before the game, usually. If you ask him, a lot of times they'll be honest and say, well, he's not available. But if you don't ask him, they're not going to offer that. So in other words, there's a lot of things that go into bullpen management that we never see watching a game on TV at all. So that's why people should never second guess bullpen management without knowing what's going on. I mean, some guy might be dealing with something at home, and he might have just told the guy, look, if we don't live in tonight, I'd really rather just take it chill because, something happened. This happened. My kid's sick, and I was up all night last night, so if you don't have to use me, if you need me, I can, but if not, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on that we don't know about.
You know how many times when I was playing there, my back was a little flared up and I wasn't going to pitch that night, but my situation never came up and you guys never found out.
Right.
You know, it's like the only time you answer that question and say, no, he was down today was when my situation would come up.
Right.
And, you bring in Mike Dunn or somebody, the guy behind me instead, and you guys go ask Snit and now they have to tell you.
Right.
But there's stuff all year long where a guy's down or not available and his spot doesn't come up and it's just slid right under the rug. Nobody finds out. And that stuff's going on all year long. You know, so-and-so's shoulders, we're going to try to stay away from him. Mm-hmm. And that's the situation. Like, I'm not going to throw him down two. If we're up one and bases loaded, all right, I got to use Matzik here, but I'm trying not to use him. And there's a lot of those situations where it'd make perfect sense to keep it at one or two runs, but we're trying to stay away from this guy and we need somebody else to step up. And that was the thing. When my back would flare up, there'd be 3 days where I wouldn't pitch and my situation didn't come up and then I'd work through it. And it never got out that I was dealing with something at that time.
Yeah.
But every time that it'd be the situation where Ryan Howard's coming up in the seventh or eighth and somebody else has to pitch. Now it's like, okay, that guy should have been in there. Why isn't he? And then the manager has to, because the manager's not going to just be like, my gut told me this guy was the right guy and make bullshit up. Now he's going to tell you he was down today. Yeah. So he doesn't, but that's how it always seems to come out is there's so much stuff going on behind the scenes or guys you're trying to stay away from that. If that situation where that guy would definitely pitch doesn't come up, it never makes its way out there.
I learned that early on because a couple of times people wrote stuff. And then I had a manager tell me, why did so-and-so write this? This guy. And he told me why I didn't use him. This guy's got this stuff going on at home, or this guy's got the show. I'm not going to bring him in if I don't have to use him.
Yeah.
The next 2 weeks, we don't want to use him if we don't have to. If we need to, we will, but we don't want to use him. And, but people don't just assume that everybody's available in every situation.
Yep.
And that's a terrible assumption to make. And some of the managers with less gravitas or less security trying to win every single game.
Yep.
They might put some guy in that they didn't plan to use. They might be down a run or they might be up a run and they weren't going to use this guy, but they're up a run and they're, we got to win this game. So they use a guy not with the big picture in mind. Freddie Gonzalez is trying to save his job, and they might make some open decisions that they would not have made if they have job security,
And then your players don't trust you.
Right.
You told me I wasn't pitching today and I was the first guy out of the pen.
You got desperate. You're listening to the fans or you're worried about your job. And a guy like Bobby Cox had so much gravitas. He knew he was going to get fired. He's going to make whatever bullpen decisions he wants to make regardless.
And Snit doesn't doesn't have that gravitas even though he should at this point.
Now. Yeah, now.
But he doesn't give a shit. I mean,
right after winning the World Series, he's pretty damn close to having it.
And it's just funny. I mean, it's cuz you also be like, "Well, he's had 3 days off. He's fresh."
Right.
Well, why has he had 3 days off? Because he's nursing something.
Right.
And, there's always something going on behind the scenes. You got to think about tomorrow. You have to think about how much you rode him last week. And then you got him hot twice the last 2 days, even though he didn't pitch. The guy's thrown 200 pitches off the mound in the last 7 days. I need to give him a break and I can't use him down 2-0, even though obviously it makes sense to use him there.
And you had, you had an off day Monday and you have another Thursday. Well, maybe they had the off day Monday, so they want to give him Tuesday to have 2 days to recover completely from whatever's, soreness. So are they off day Thursday so you don't use a guy Wednesday that you might have used? You want to give him 2 days. So a lot of things go in. Long story short, there's a lot of things that go into this and you try to explain that to folks and – It's not that they don't know what they're talking about. It's just they have no idea what's going on behind the scenes because even we don't know and we're there every day talking to the manager. But if you don't ask specifically about every guy, the manager's not going to offer that usually. They're not going to go, by the way, tonight this guy's not available and this guy's not available. And then after the game, they're not going to go, he wasn't available because they don't want to throw guys under the bus. They don't want to make a guy look like he's, complaining about the sore arm or whatever.
Right, and the same thing goes for a pinch hitter. Say you got Harper on the bench that day. Right. If the other team knows,
that he's not available,
Minter and Matzik are down, he's going to save Harper for the eighth inning to pinch hit.
Right.
But if he knows Minter and Matzik are available that day, he might burn him in the fifth or sixth in a situation that doesn't seem like the best time for him.
Right.
And you're going to get questioned, why'd you pinch hit Harper there? It's like, well, if I pinch hit him in the eighth, he's facing Matzik.
Right.
You know, where he's probably an automatic out if Matzik's locked in. You know, so there's always so much going on that you don't want to tip your hand and say, Matzik's down today. You know, because you want them to burn him early and do things like that.
Absolutely. So
it's really, you know, it's the hardest part of managing is managing the bullpen. And it's the easiest to criticize.
And that's why I like Bochy. He's a legendary manager because he was so good at managing the bullpen, you know.
He sets you up to bring the guy in. You know, I mean, that's what a manager's trying to do is set you up to get Minter or Matzik against Harper.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, Thornburg or somebody that might not be as good a matchup for him.
Ask Snit whether, you know, a win like that can kind of turn around the mojo that's kind of spinning their wheels lately. And he said, you never know. I mean, you get two or three good starts after this one, and it sure can. But you just never know when you're going to look back on a game, a big win, and go, that's the one that got you going. And that's happened before also. We saw that happen last year. St. Louis, you talked about that sweep. That was when things started turning. And then at the end, when it got to San Diego – And Will Smith has that incredible bases loaded escape act.
Yep.
That was when you felt like, okay, this team can beat anybody in any venue. And that gave them all that momentum. They go home and finish the Phillies off, win the division, clinch the division, going with all the momentum in the world after winning the division in the postseason, feeling like they could beat anybody.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's another reason not to really panic early on is that none of it matters. You know, I mean, you stay in the fight. And if you can get hot going into the postseason and if you're three down in July, nobody remembers. If you're five back in August, you know, as long as you get back in it, nobody remembers. Yeah. But if you can get hot at the right time, which they did last year, you can ride it all the way to the World Series. And that's why players don't panic. And you just, you know, you operate on the mindset, we just got to get our foot in the door.
Yeah.
And they're definitely in striking distance,
especially with the wild card. I mean, you know, I think they're definitely aiming to win the division again, but there's always the wild card. So you aim for the division, and then that's a fallback. But as long as you stay with the Mets, they're probably going to drag a team into the wild card, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, nobody remembers, to your point, nobody remembers what happened before the All-Star break last year except Acuña got hurt after having an MVP-type start. Freddie struggled mightily at the first of the season and then caught fire. And Austin Riley didn't have an RBI in like the first 15 games or an extra base hit. And look at it, and he had an MVP type season.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we talk about it all the time. I mean, we're watching these games and analyzing them, and I don't remember any of that.
Yeah.
I remember them.
I only remember because I was writing it, you know?
Yep.
And I've gone back and looked, but I mean, people forget how bad Fried was early last year. He was terrible. He had two stints on the IL with the groin. Yeah. And a blister. And you're going, oh, man, Fried, that was his best season the year before. Now we're getting back to being Max Fried.
Yep.
And then once he got it straightened out and got his delivery down again, his directional and all that, he was the best pitcher in the majors in the second half.
And that's the beauty of a major league season is you have so much time to figure it out and for things to click.
Yeah. So the thing I wanted to real quick ask, if you paid attention to Jackson Stevens, because I got a chance to talk to him the other day and did a story on him. Man, what a refreshing guy to talk to. It's always cool when you get a guy like him or Matzik. I remember talking to Matzik about his story. You feel so good for him because they're like guys who have gone through some serious shit where it looked like their careers were over and they persevered. And usually there's somebody behind the scenes that helped them persevere. And in both their cases, Matzik and Jackson Stevens, it was the wife. Matzik had the yips, was out of baseball altogether for a full year, and out of the majors for 5 years, was pitching in indie ball for 2 years. When he was out of baseball altogether and living at home with his wife in California, his wife is the one who said, don't give it up yet. You're too young. You got to try at least. That's why he did it. Well, Jackson Stevens, the same way. He got bit by the COVID situation in that, he had got DFA'd by the Reds at the end of 2019, which is the worst time that anybody could get DFA'd by anybody. Because then in 2020, he's waiting for a phone call right in the offseason. And COVID hits in the middle of spring training, shuts down spring training when he might have got a call from somebody, you know, at least a minor league deal going in the season. So there's no minor league season. So teams aren't calling anybody for those. They're using their own guys, their minor league prospects at the alternate site and their fringe guys, but they're not adding guys to the minor league rosters.
Right.
So he sits out an entire year after pitching a little bit in the big leagues with the Reds in 17 and 18 and pitching all year in 2019, Triple A, and just having a mediocre year. Sits out all year in 2020. So he's forgotten by for all intents and purposes. He hadn't pitched in the big leagues in 2 years. He's waiting again by the phone that winter. Gets no calls from big league teams. Only call he gets is from a Mexican league team. Oh, now, if you've pitched in the big leagues a couple of years, you're in your mid-late 20s. That's when you have to go, all right, you're married, but they don't have kids, which worked out for them because that would have been a lot harder, I think.
So much better.
Right. You don't have kids, but, you know, that's when you're going, do I really want to go down and pitch? You don't speak Spanish, you know. Do I want to go down and pitch in a Mexican independent league? That was the only call he got, and he wasn't going to do it. He's a small-town Alabama guy, you know. He's never been outside the country except for, like, a week vacation with his family. You know, and his wife is the one that said, if you don't do it, you're going to regret it. You're too young still, and you're still too much talent. You haven't been hurt. You haven't had TJ surgery. Give it a shot at least. She's the only reason that he did it. And he went down there, pitched in Mexico, pitched well enough, had a really high strikeout rate. The ERA didn't really matter because that's a hitter's league. Big strikeout to walks rate, like the best he'd had in his career. Pitched well enough that Yepy, with the Braves, the bullpen catcher, Yepes is the, we call him Yepy. He's the bullpen catcher. He is a GM of a Venezuelan winter league team, which hardly anybody even knows if they're not in the bullpen, but he's done it for like 7 years. Well, yeah. He got some videos sent to him going, hey, this guy's pretty good. He can probably help you. Yepy signed him to come down to Venezuela, talked to him. He said, I can help you out with speaking the language, all that stuff. And one of their catchers was William Contreras, who the Braves sent down there to get more at bats after he didn't get a lot of bats last year. So he goes down there. Long story short, he's the Venezuelan pitcher of the year. And he was a starter after making like 3 bullpen appearances. They put him in the rotation. Pitched great. Had like a mid-1 ERA, good strikeout to walks ratio. And Yepy tells, hey, this guy could help us. We could put him in AA, AAA, have a slot ready, you know, in case he's needed at some point. The Braves give him a shot, sign him to a minor league deal, no major league spring training invite. Benefited by having the lockout because he can go to minor league camp when the major league pitchers are not doing anything. He goes to minor league camp, pitches really well in a AAA minor league game. Then the lockout ends. The Braves needed, remember they started Bryce Elder in their first Grapefruit League game because they needed guys who'd been pitching. The camp had only been open like 3 days, so the major league guys, they didn't want to use yet that early. So they let Jackson Stevens pitch in the second game, gave up a couple runs, but again impressed. And Snit had seen him in that AAA minor league game too, and in the big league game. So your guy, that your reliever that we both liked a lot, but struggled early, and they DFA'd him in the first week.
Webb
got DFA'd the first week. They call him up. So at the end of the first week, they add him to the major league roster, and he comes into a big league team. Gives up a couple runs. He pitches that night as cleanup duty. He pitched like two or three innings and gave up a couple of runs. But since then, this guy has pitched his ass off. And everybody in the pen is like, Darren O'Day's like, I don't even know how he was over there that long because this guy can make the ball move any way he wants to make it move. And Colin McHugh also pitched in Venezuela like 8 years ago and had the same thing happen to him. He said, I pitched down there like 3 weeks. And it was a springboard. Then Houston signed him, and he had his breakout season with Houston in the rotation. Yep. So he said, I know what that's like, man, to go down there and pitch, be in a foreign country, not know anybody. But it's like you're at the bottom, and you realize, as Jackson Stevens said, I realize my back's against the wall. He goes, it's not like I didn't want to take advantage of the opportunity with the Reds because I pitched my butt off and tried to be the best pitcher I could. But my back wasn't against the wall. Here, I felt like my back was against the wall. He came in and signed a minor league deal with the Braves. He was thrilled because he grew up pulling for them to a small town in Alabama, Oxford, Alabama. So the Braves gave him a chance. He felt like, this is it. This is my last chance. I need to make the most of it, you know. And this guy's pitched great, and he's worked his way up into a more prominent role, and now the Braves are really relying on him. And he's got really good stuff, too. I mean, he's out there. He's pitching. He's not like a guy that's just getting by on guile.
He's pitching. I admire it so much because it's a big ego hit, you know, and it was something that probably would have been toward the end of my career. The thing I needed was to go pitch in an easier league.
Yeah.
And find myself again. But I've kept making major league rosters. And I needed to ditch the sinker. I needed to start throwing four seams because the game had changed. But I couldn't swallow my pride and go put on a AAA uniform.
Yeah.
You know, and I admire guys that are willing to do that. Swallow your pride and go play the damn game again and figure yourself out at this lower level. You in the Mexican League and you think of yourself as this big leaguer and yeah. That's where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you're in the Mexican League. I don't know what it's like down there, but I guarantee they're not getting private planes.
Oh my God.
They're not chartering a jet. They're probably riding in some shitty bus.
Oh yeah.
And you know, so you have to, the guys that are willing to do that and it pays off, I couldn't be happier for, because a lot of guys with big league time aren't willing to do it. And it's kind of what you have to do and go through to, one, appreciate the major leagues again and appreciate your opportunity, but to also go down there and get better and pitch against a little easier hitting,
yeah,
where you can get away with some mistakes and fine tune some things and get better. And, you know, for me at that point in my career, I was mentally just burnt out from injuries and stuff like that. But I look back still to this day, I look back and I'm like, you know what? What if you would have just swallowed your pride?
Yeah.
And I could have played another 5 years, you know, but I wasn't willing to do it. Now I'm doing a podcast, you know, so the guys that are willing to do that and it works out for them, they swallow their pride, they go down and just figure it out and they have that fight in them. Yeah. I really admire.
He had a 4.98 ERA in Mexico, 12 games, 11 starts. But somebody told me, ERA doesn't mean that much because it is a hitter's league, kind of like that.
Like the PCL.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Small ballparks, low humidity, some altitude. But get this, I didn't even know this team existed that he pitched for. He pitched for a team called Dos Laredos. And you know why they're called Dos Laredos? Because they play their games at two different places, one in Mexico, a Laredo over there. It's called something. I wrote the name. It's called Laredo Mexican name over there. And Laredo, Texas. They play in two stadiums. They're the only bi-national team in pro baseball or any level baseball. So he got to live in Laredo, but all the other games are in Mexico except for the Laredo team. Right. But they're traveling all over Mexico in buses and, you know, crappy ballparks and stuff. And so he had 69 strikeouts and 16 walks in 65 innings in Mexico. It was the highest strikeout rate since rookie ball in 2012 when he was 3 months out of high school, because he got drafted out of high school. 18th round pick out of high school. But Jose Yepes, yeah, Braves bullpen catcher, got some film of him. Jose Yepes is with Cardenales de Lara in the Cardinals in Venezuela, pretty big team down there. They play in Barquisimeto, Venezuela. And I asked Jackson what that was like. And he goes, well, I lived in a hotel that was attached to a mall. He goes, I never went anywhere except the ballpark and the hotel. And I'd go over and eat in the food court every meal. And I'd sit there alone eating. And people would walk by and look at me and go, he's not from here. Because he's got this big beard.
What is this big?
Yeah, big bearded Alabama boy with a gut, yep, you know. And he's over there eating in the food court. He knew enough Spanish to order his food, and that was it. But he said, they went into a Mexican restaurant when he first got there, and he went in and ordered queso. And they're like, what the hell is queso? And they go, dude, we don't order that here. That's American Mexican food. And he goes, okay, salsa? They go, yeah, we got that.
Well, but, yeah, I just think, like, you know, that's what I'm saying. Swallow your pride, because you're going from, you have these clubbies washing your cars for you and bringing you food, and you're flying on these private jets. You're getting paid all this money. And now you're playing for Dos Laredo ordering salsa at a mall. You know, I mean, you have to you really have to put your ego aside and just wear it, grind through it. And I'm glad he did. You know, I'm always happy for these guys that it works for.
14 games in Venezuela, including 9 starts. He had a 1.82 ERA, 44 strikeouts, 10 walks, and 49 innings. And the thing is, in Venezuela, you're pitching against some guys that have been in the big leagues and some guys that are savvy hitters. A lot of guys that will play a little bit in the big leagues, and they'll go down to those winter leagues and play for another 15 years. They might be 40 years old and have a gut, but they can hit still.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? They don't have any range in the outfield, and they don't care down there. Just
they
hit bombs.
They just hit. They still rake. So you got to be able to pitch down there. And that's what That's what Jose Yepes said. Yepes said, I've had so many guys come down there,
American guys, easy.
And he goes, and they can't pitch. They think they can come in and they can't pitch because you got to be able to pitch down there. And that's why he really impressed him. And he called AA, he called Alex and said, this guy can help us. He just didn't know it was going to be that soon. You know?
Right.
So, yeah, he comes in and he gave up, let's see, against the Mets in that first appearance. His first two appearances, he gave up three runs. And since then, nothing. He just turned 28 Wednesday, by the way.
That's cool. Good for him.
Yeah, the Braves have done that now twice in 3 years, have come up with a guy like that, like from indie ball. In Matzik's case, it was a nothing league down in Texas where he'd been for the second year. So that's good scouting when you got in good get and having good tips and good connections to people, you know.
And Yepi was a catcher, so you know he's gonna know. He can watch a bullpen and know if a guy's got good stuff or not. And he probably jumped in and caught him. You know, that's one of the benefits of,
right,
of being a former catcher.
Right. I had no idea that Yepi had been doing that for 7 years.
Oh, Yepi's the man.
What a winter ball job. What a winter job, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, Yepi's the man.
So anyway, that story's not at the Athletic. You should look at it. The guy's a really likable dude. He's and he can thank Brittany Stevens, his wife. She's a neonatal intensive care unit nurse in Birmingham. And she's the one that said, do it. You're going to regret it if you don't give it another try. Otherwise, I said, what would you be doing right now? Coaching or something? He goes, I don't know, man. Running a school, a baseball school, or coaching at my old high. I don't have no idea. Because he went out of high school. He was drafted out of high school. No college, you know.
Man, it's tough. You get out in the real world, you realize, you know, even for me, it's like I don't have any life skills. I don't have any way to make money
except
now.
Podcasting that I'm, skills.
That's all I got. Even basic stuff, like learning how to clean.
Fortunately, you made a little money.
Yeah.
You didn't make any money.
I'm good. But yeah, it's a that. But that's another reason why guys go down there, because you can go down to Venezuela and make 20 grand a month.
Right. Right.
You know, if you're a minor league up and down guy, you made maybe 100 grand kind of bouncing between, and then you go down to Venezuela and make 40 in 2 months.
Right.
So a lot of guys do it just for the money.
So now he's making, you know, millions and millions less than the other guys in that bullpen, but he's making over 600 grand. And for a guy that would have been out of baseball, that's damn good money.
You're not making
money,
that
man.
Anywhere else.
No. and first class travel and not needing any money during the season, really, you know?
You get done playing and you start poking around at jobs and,
right,
you know, you're used to getting a $40,000 check, right, every 2 weeks, and somebody offers you 50 for the whole year. It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
It's a little different out here.
It's nice when you got a wife with a good job too, you know, that can tell you, go down there. I can take care of it here until you get back.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah. So
and
anyway.
No kids.
All right. Well, another big series for the Braves this weekend. Got the Padres, man. Padres in town. I wish Tatis was playing. We don't get to see Tatis Acuna once again. But the Padres are playing good ball, though. They got a good team.
Yeah.
Machado's playing great.
There's going to be some strikeouts tonight. Fried and Darvish.
Yeah, what a good matchup. Yeah. And then we got Sunday, dude. Something I never thought I'd see in the big leagues. We got an AM game, other than the Boston, you know, the connected to the marathon, the game they play every year.
11:30?
11:30 start. It was 1:30. Nope, Peacock. They're doing it for Peacock Network. They're covering some games this year.
Those guys are going to be so
Peacock,
mad.
Why Peacock wanted to start games at 11:30 on a Sunday, I have no idea. But they apparently think that that's what they need to do. But, I mean, 11:30 on a Sunday.
You do it in the minor leagues. They have kids' day.
Right.
Or like a weekday, they'll let all the kids out of school, and it's like a 10 a.m. game.
Yeah.
You're not even awake till the fourth inning.
So some of the younger guys that have been in the minors in recent years might have done that. But some of the veterans are going to be like, what? They don't even start spring training games for one.
Who's pitching?
Oh, it's a good matchup.
Oh,
that's
Kyle's
Kyle
pitching.
That's
yeah, he's
Wright.
He's spent some time in the bushes the last few years, so he might be able to handle it.
Oh, he's played some of those games for sure. He's the best guy to probably do that if you're going to have one of these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's played a few of those. So that's going to be interesting. Got a 4 o'clock game Saturday, then a 10. Man, it's not like it used to be where you could just look and count on every game starting at the same time every night. The Braves had a stretch recently where they played like 8 straight games at 8 different times.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah. So anyway, they got the three games here, and then you got a tough road trip, man. You go to Milwaukee and you go to Miami. And the Marlins ain't messing around. They're right there with the Braves. Hell of a pitching staff.
Like Milwaukee, I get it. You know, they've had some pretty good teams the last few years. The Hitters Park is a tough place to play, but the Marlins could be 0-40 right now.
And yeah. And they give the Braves fits.
Going to Miami for whatever reason that,
yeah,
you know, it's not as much of a clown ball park as it used to be. But when you had like the Clevelanders just blasting music in left field, there's six fans in the stadium and they got that dance crew just going apeshit the whole game.
I tell you what, it's still very different. It's still not many people there at all. They play the music really loud and it rattles off that roof when it's closed.
It's a weird place.
It's a totally unusual environment. And yeah, it's different.
You never know how you're going to play or what you're going to get there. It's one of those ones you just kind of get through.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's where Acuña is going back for the first time since he hurt his knee there. So it's going to be Acuña and Chisholm. To me, the two most dynamic players in the division. And I know we got Soto in the division and Bryce Harper, and Soto's probably maybe the best pure hitter, all-around hitter in baseball. But I will take Chisholm and Acuña for dynamic guys to watch if I was paying for season tickets. Those two guys are as good as it gets, man.
I just don't know how Chisholm has so much power. He's not a very big guy.
He reminds me so much of Alfonso Soriano.
Yeah, that's a good comp for the power and body.
That's the guy, the wiry body. Then Soriano had the 30-30 season. Remember, he was hitting bombs.
Opposite field, yeah.
How about the home run that Chisholm hit at Arizona the other day?
I couldn't believe it.
To the left of center line drive, it was this far off the ground.
That's what I mean. You know, it's
that guy's phenomenal.
That's a ball that Adam Dunn hits. You know, a guy that's 6'5", 240, not a guy that's, I think he's probably 6'1", 180.
Oh, yeah. He's phenomenal. He's so talented. He's got so much bounce. You know who he reminds me of, too? Go out of baseball. Ja Morant. Mm. The way he moves, just bounces. It's just, he's like 160 pounds of fast twitch muscles, you know? And he's got a great arm. He can play the field, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah, between him and Acuña, man, those are two guys that if I wasn't covering the sport, those are two guys I would love to have season tickets to watch because you don't ever know. They're going to do something every night.
Do you know what else is funny? It's like, you know, you're getting older and the game's been a certain way for so long. And, you know, Chisholm always has this pink hair.
Blue hair, pink hair. Yeah.
My son's got his baseball card and they went crazy.
Oh, yeah. They love him.
Like kids love these guys. Love it. So
they love the small guys, too.
Yeah, exactly.
They can identify with them.
Or somebody. But that's why it's like, you know, my perspective totally shifted on all this old school, new school stuff since I had kids. Because, you know, they pulled a Mike Trout and they just looked at it like, is this guy good, Dad? Right. Then they got the guy with the pink hair and they just lost it. Like, I can't believe I got this card.
Well, I'm old, man, and I look at it and I would rather watch. Seriously, yeah. I know Trout is the best all-around player probably still. He's having a great year, too. He's having the year we talked about it he's going to have. Yeah. He's having it. If I was going to pay, I would pay to see Acuña and Chisholm before Trout.
And Soto. Yeah.
Before Trout. And Trout is great, but Chisholm is so dynamic, man. Yeah. And he's so flamboyant and the charisma.
Yeah.
And I love watching it, man. I love watching it.
That's the battle for MLB, you know. It's like these guys that have all these mannerisms now, but they're trying to appeal to kids.
I love watching him. And it would be different if he wasn't as talented as he is, but he's legitimate. Like, if he was a boring player.
Yordani Valdespin, remember him?
Right. If he just played totally boring vanilla, what he does would still be incredible. Because look at his numbers. He's a great player. But when you add all the Euro step at the end of every home run and the hair and just the talking track, I love him. I love this guy.
It's hard for me, but I gotta admit it's
him and Acuña,
in a way, it's good for the game.
Yeah. And the clothes, you wouldn't want everybody doing that. You wouldn't want everybody wearing the clothes. Like, you wouldn't want all the Braves wearing all the yellow that Acuña does because it wouldn't look right.
That's where we're headed, though. It's going to turn into baseball.
But it looks great on Acuña. Well, if you could be one of the best five players in a game like Acuña, wear whatever the hell you want. But
at least be good if you're going to do that stuff.
But if you're an average player,
calm down.
Then just dress with a uniform on. We don't need any
black cleats, accessories. Show up on time.
Yeah, we don't need accessories from you. Yeah. We don't need accessories. Leave that for the great players.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I agree.
All right, that's it. 7:55 is real. We'll talk to you guys next week early.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.